Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 4, Ambarish Maharaj, offended by Durvas Muni. Text number 45. Yoma matitting ayatam. Yoma matitim ayatam. Atiyena nimantra cha. Adatva buk. Stasya Sajaste Darshe Palam Yomama Titim Ayatam Atityena Nimantracha Adatva Buktavam Stasya. Sadyaste darshaye palam yomam atitam ayatam atityena namantyacha aratva buktavam stasya sadyaste darshaye palam. Yama matitam mayatam atityena nimantyacha aratva buktamam tasya sajante darshaye param. Yama matitam mayatam Yaha, this man who mum unto me atitim, who being an uninvited guest, ayatam, had come here, adityena, with the reception of a guest. Nimantra, after inviting me. Cha, also. Adatva, without giving food. Bhuktavan, has himself eaten. Tasya, of him. Sadyaha, immediately. Te, of you. Darshaye, I shall show. Palam, the result. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Ambarish, you have invited me to eat as a guest, but instead of feeding me, you yourself have eaten first. Because of your misbehavior, I shall show you something to punish you. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, a devotee cannot be defeated by a so-called mystic yogi. This will be proved by the failure of Durvas Muni and his endeavor to chastise Maharaj Ambarish. Harha abhaktasya kuto mahadgunaha, from Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 18th chapter, text number 12. One who is not a pure devotee of the Supreme Lord has no good qualifications, however great a mystic, philosopher, or fruit worker he may be. Only a devotee emerges victorious in all circumstances, as will be shown in this incident involving the rivalry between Durvas and Maharaj Ambarish. Om Arayana Tibrandasya Yananyara Salakaya Taktram Nitam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was sitting in the darkness of ignorance with my eyes shut tight, but my spiritual master came with the torchlight of knowledge and opened them. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastha Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namane. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesha Sunyavari Paschatari Satarane. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Radha Rasha Sri Ramya Ramacha Paramamanta Raso Bhava Krishna Kanta Krishna Vaksa Salastita Krishna Pranadi Devi Chao Ma Vishnu Prasurapi Vaishnavi Vyonamo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We're all killing each other all the time. When we're born, we start to die. But as we're dying, we're killing everyone else. We're killing each other all the time. And only children are honest about this. Children admit that they want to kill everybody. They're killing each other. As a child, what? I made little guns. My brother and I, we made little weapons. And we pretended to kill each other. We pretended to kill everything. And actually, we're seeing that socialization process, it tones that down. We're instructed. We're given information. We're educated by the whole social culture. Every social culture is training children to restrain themselves, to not be so open. But they're honest. Children are honest in a way that we can't hope to be, because as I say, we've been conditioned, we've been formed, we've been instructed We've been given socialization processes which bring us into line and carry us to a point where we know that there are certain rules and regulations that we're expected to follow, or we may be punished by mother, father, so many things. So it's interesting that this whole description here, Durvas Muni and Ambarish, it's an amazing dynamic, and it's laid out here, this amazing presentation of absolute truth. It completely covers the entire spectrum. In every example that's given here and in all other examples throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Puranas, the Vedas, the incredible amazing potency, the intense, clear, definite message that we're given of the absolute truth is so amazing. The psychology is absolutely pure and on the mark. There's one devotee, his name is Dear Govinda. Have you ever heard of Dear Govinda? You've heard of Dear Govinda? His karmi name is David Wolf. Now his karmi name is Dr. David Wolf. And I got to know him in Alachua, Florida. I was in Alachua, Florida for 10 years. And when I was first there, he was giving Srimad Bhagavatam classes. And I was amazed because he had an incredible grasp of our philosophy. And he was able to bring the information out of the Bhagavatam and give examples from experiences that we all share in our real life in the world. This is the difference between jnana and vijnana. Jnana is what we have here. But this is also providing with vijnana. Vijnana is practical application. Jitendra and I were talking about this yesterday. Jnana is knowledge. Vijnana, he is a good example. Jitendra has way more knowledge than he's willing to admit, but he's got it. But he goes beyond that because he applies his knowledge. And I was just listening to him preach on the phone to somebody, and he's using their vocabulary, their understanding, but he's sneaking in a lot of Krishna consciousness. He knows how to do that. He uses lyrics from all kinds of amazing poems and poetry and songs and things, but he sees how he can put a Krishna conscious spin on it and give that to people that he cares about. But he's a busy guy. He cares about everybody. He has friends all around Chicago, and he deals with them in a practical, real, material way. But he's constantly slipping in little bits of information. Like, I was trying to follow his example when my father was dying. He hated God his whole life. My father was a complete atheist. So I'd say, when I'm talking to him about anything, I would say something like, God only knows, which is a standard phrase, but it brings, God into the conversation, because otherwise impossible. If you're talking to an atheist and you say God, they immediately become disturbed and upset and sometimes even angry. So if you can slip in anything about God in the course of a conversation, you may be actually influencing anyone's life in a remarkably positive kind of way. So this is a good example here of how Ambarish is really helping Durvas Muni, because Durvas Muni is he's puffed up. He's very proud. He's a mystic yogi. He has big power. And he feels like he's going to get over on Ambarish. He's going to show Ambarish a thing or two, teach Ambarish a lesson. But we see Ambarish is so mellow. He's so humble. And ultimately, throughout the course of this whole description, you'll see that by Ambarish taking a very, very humble position, he finally actually captures the heart of Durvas Muni. And then there's a resolution of what was initially a kind of a conflict, some trouble between the two of them, mostly brought on, as I say, by this mentality of, Durvas, thinking that he's powerful and he has a position and he can use some kind of leverage to advance himself, even possibly in his effort to become even more powerful. And we see this is a great disease. And actually, the people in the world who want to become powerful, really, if we examine that kind of a mentality, whether it's in in the clothing or garb of someone who is attempting to become saintly, even someone who's following the process of Krishna consciousness. But if they're doing that, and somewhere in their consciousness is the idea that they're going to develop some kind of power, they're going to become more powerful, this is a very dangerous position for anyone to take. And it means that they may be subjecting themselves to what the Christians call, the Christians have a word, a phrase, they say original sin. The Christians talk about the original sin, but then if you ask them, well, what exactly is that? They'll start to talk about an apple, a snake, a Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve. That's their immediate go-to when they're, you know, questioned about the original sin. And it's all right, because the information they're providing, it's okay, it's accurate, but it's not like the Bhagavatam. I can't give you an actual real reference page number, but again and again, we'll see. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, and here also we're seeing an example of how the original sin, simply understood and clearly stated, the original sin is trading away love of God for personal power. And then we see that's the greatest trouble in the world today. Everybody basically in the world today, and all the technology and everything, is directed toward helping people think that they are God, or even in the case of atheists, better than your imaginary spaghetti monster God. Now, they come up with all these bizarre, crazy, you know, examples to try to support their very shaky, untenable position as claiming that there is no God. So the reason is they want to be God. They want to eliminate God so they can usurp. Prabhupada uses the word usurp. Take over the position of God. That's what they want to do. So that's the standard throughout the world we're seeing. Durvas Muni is showing that he's influenced by that kind of an idea. He wants power. This is why he's practicing yoga. This is why he's trying to get mystic cities so that he can have whatever he wants. Moments in property city. I take whatever I want, you know. And this is a standard mentality throughout the world today. Why? Because people want to be God. Everybody on the planet Earth now, they want to be God practically, except for a few rare exceptions. There are a few people, instead of wanting to be God, they simply are willing, they want to serve God. And to the degree we're able to understand the difference and act on that understanding, then we become free. We become free from all this pain and conflict and sorrow and confusion. People are so bewildered. The more a person is thinking, I can take the position of God, I can become powerful and do whatever I want, the more they bring pain and suffering upon themselves and others. Because I know, I've seen that in my own life. I've seen that whenever I become confused and thinking that I can take control, that I can have some position of power, then I'm knocked down. We have the temple president in the temple I stay at in Gujarat, nice devotee, Satyadananda Prabhu. He has a neat phrase. He says, it's time for you to humble up. It's time to humble up. And he's right, you know. It's this, everyone comes around to that pretty much, you know, to the point. I mean, I have to admit for myself, I had so many points where I had to really humble up. And it's an important lesson. It's an important lesson that we all need to face all along the way. And it's not like all of a sudden I've reached a point where I don't have to think about it or worry about it anymore. We have to, from one moment to the next, we have to understand. Srila Prabhupada, what does Prabhupada call himself? In his his poem that he, when he first comes into Boston, and then he went from there to New York, but he calls himself insignificant beggar. Huh? Here he is, Jagat Guru. He's the guru, the teacher of everyone. Jagat, in the universe, he has that position, but he takes on this humble position of saying that, you know, I'm an insignificant beggar. But this is, for example, he's showing us that if we want to achieve an excellent position, we'll have to first understand just that, you know, the Jivatma, it's no bigger than 1/10 of 1/1000th, the tip of a hair. So it's hard to even begin to imagine and understand
the degree of insignificance that, you know, characterizes how we can really definitely be described. But to get back to the point here, so we have two personalities. We have Ambarish and we have Durvas Muni. And Ambarish is giving the very nice example of someone who is very naturally humble and is doing all he can to just satisfy everyone, help people understand their position. And so he's the one that actually brings a lesson for Durvas Muni, because Durvas Muni is an example of someone who, really, we can say he's intoxicated. He's intoxicated by power. And we can even see in the world today, there are what are referred to and predicted in the final cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is predicted that those in positions of power and authority in the world right now, this, especially, and more so and more so throughout the course of Kali Yuga, they are Rakshasas. And a Rakshasa, what does he want? He wants power. He wants to lord it over the material energy. And so this describes the Rakshasas. And the only thing that can satisfy them, when we consider the highest level of those who are in positions of power and authority on this planet, what do they really want? They can have really anything. They can have women. They've got fame. They've got wealth. They've got it all. They really have. But what do they want more than when a living being gets to the point where they have unlimited wealth? They can print money. In fact, they've gone beyond that now. They don't even need to mess with paper anymore to accumulate great wealth or say they're in charge of great wealth. It's pixels on a screen now. It's little charges of electricity in cyberspace now represent wealth. And in fact, because of the level we've reached now in terms of the amount of illusion, we have illusion on top of illusion to an incredible degree. I saw a video on YouTube yesterday. If you go on the internet, you see all kinds of amazing things. And this video, it shows this swimming pool. And there's a whole elaborate chamber. You ever heard of the Guggenheim? You've been to New York? You've seen the Guggenheim Museum? In New York, there's a museum. You know the Guggenheim? And it's got these, like, it's got a spiral platform that goes up throughout the whole building. Spiral, it's not stairways, it's a spiral ramp. That's what it is, it's a ramp. And it's a spiral ramp. It's very remarkable architecture. The building itself is considered an incredible expression artistically. And that's what it is. It's a gallery for all kinds of paintings. So somehow or another, someone generated this as an image, a computer graphic image, you know, CGI. And in this thing, they have about a dozen giraffes. They put giraffes, you know, these animals with big long necks and long legs. They have very convincingly, with computer-generated graphics imaging, they have these giraffes that run down this spiral ramp, and they go out onto a diving board, and they dive into a huge swimming pool. And if you see this, it's absolutely believable. There's no gap. There's no blemish. There's no apparent flaw. Or there's no, you know, anything is missing. And so it's totally convincing that that's what you're seeing. So in this, what this really shows, though, is another point that we're given in the Bhagavatam. Justice, in Kali Yuga, justice will only be there for those who can pay for it. So, and how does that fit in with justice? Evidence in a court of law used to include photographs and videos, even better than a photograph. Now they're no longer admissible. They're no longer admit. You can use them, but someone can easily challenge any evidence of that nature and say, you know, unless you have a whole lot of other evidence to support it, it can be tossed out because it's so easy now to make these, you know, different things. So this point, though, is that, so I was mentioning before, we come into the world, we're immediately dying, we start to die the minute we're born. And the point is, though, that children are trying to, you know, understand death, and they're seeing that people can kill each other. You know, this is a horrifying thing, and their immediate tendency is to want to understand, well, what is this terrible, horrible, nasty, weird place that I find myself in this world. And so to deal with things, they act out. They go through different role-playing processes to try to understand. What is it to kill? What is it to die? And so they play these games with each other. And then gradually we're elevated, we graduate up through different levels, and we understand that, no, well, see, that's a real problem, and we can't just be frivolous and light about something like that, because it's a heavy topic. So, but the children are honest, and it's still there. Death is a problem. I experienced it directly. I gave a class half a year ago, and I mentioned that I'd actually tried to kill myself. Now, and as a result of that, I made lots of enemies. No one likes someone who's willing to do that. It's a great crime. It's a Roman Catholic police officer at the airport. I confided in him. He became a great friend of mine. But he was shocked by the idea that, you know, he was talking to someone who had actually tried to throw away their life. And he said it's the sin of desperation. But guess what? It turns out, now I'm 70 years old, I got through that, and I've had a chance over the last 50 years to talk with a lot of other people about this particular subject. Everyone, it's the part of the human condition is that since we can, at one time or another, everyone is considering, what would it be like for me to kill myself? And in today's world, where people are losing their houses, they're losing their jobs, they're losing their soulmates, you know, their partner for life, this is happening regularly, and people are thinking about ending their lives everywhere, constantly. Here's a little tip. Here's a way anyone can make big money. If you want to be a soothsayer, you know what a soothsayer is? That's someone who can tell you the future. You know, they have a crystal ball, or they're expert with astrology. Sometimes astrologists, they're actually finding themselves called upon to give some information about the future. So they're in the category of soothsayer. So someone who can understand the future, or they'll have a crystal ball, or they can read a palm. And I guarantee you that if someone wanted to get into this field, and you look at someone's palm, and you, oh, you've been thinking about ending your life. See, there's this where your lifeline crosses your heart line right here. And there are other very significant markings and different, things here that show that right now you're thinking about ending your life. Now, at least one out of 20 people, and probably even more than that, one out of 20 will probably realize that they've been caught. But a few will actually say to the fortune reader, how did you know that? You can see that? You know, they'll get caught. So it's just another scam that people are using like that. And then they say, well, you're going to need a lot of spiritual work. Here's a candle. But it'll cost $20 for this candle that you can get at a, you know, Dollar Tree for a buck. So these, as Prabhupada would say, these things are going on. So this is the standard in Kali Yuga. What did Prabhupada call it? The cheaters and the cheated. People are being cheated. They're cheating other people. This kind of thing is going on. And why? It's because we don't have a Brahmin class. What's the most significant thing, at least in my opinion, about the Brahmins? No money. A real Brahmin, he doesn't need money. He may get it, but then he immediately uses it to carry forward spiritual life for himself and everyone else. That's a real Brahmin. So Brahmins don't require money. Kshatriyas, on the other hand, should have literally millions of dollars. Kshatriyas should have, practically speaking, unlimited bank balance, wealth beyond anyone's ability to even imagine. Every Kshatriya should have access to. He should have a gigantic palace, and he should have as many wives as he wants. That's the Vedic standard if you go back more than 5,000 years before Kali Yuga started to hit and set in a dramatic way. So I put together a sheet where I describe like this, and I like to give it to police officers and tell them that they are Kshatriyas. They like to know that as a Kshatriya, in the true sense of the term, Kshatriya as it should really apply to them, they should be receiving millions of dollars rather than the same salary as a school teacher, who, by the way, also should probably get much more. So as school teacher, as also, though, in a brahminical position. So a real Brahmin should also be cared for by the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas understand my position is to get good advice from these Brahmins, so I depend on them for their knowledge and wisdom. So I'll make sure that they're taken care of very, very nicely. So, but then from their side, the Kshatriyas should have incredible wealth and power. And to the degree a nation understands that and carries that effort forward, then they have no problems. They can eat, they can sleep, they can mate, and the defense is there because the Kshatriyas are, what are they doing? They're serving and they're protecting. And why should they get millions of dollars? Sometimes even the police that I'm trying to compliment, you know, they say, wait a minute. I say, wait a minute, you're risking your life. You're out here risking your life. What's that worth? What's a life worth? What's your life worth? Millions. I'm saying millions of dollars, because that's your job, is to actually be willing to give up your life to benefit other people. So in my opinion, that's their position. They should be honored in that way. And then the Vaishyas, they're carrying on with business. And then the Shudras, they're serving everyone. So we should try to understand that's there. Whether people want to admit it or agree to it or not, or if they're offended by the idea, it doesn't matter. The caste system is always there within any group, with any population. You're going to always find like that. And the Vedic, the Varnashram system is absolutely perfect. For instance, what's one of the main central features to the entire Varnashram system that Ambarish is possibly more aware of or more directly connected with than Durvash Muni here, as we read other things about these two amazing characters? Ambarish is probably a little bit more connected to the fact that the ideal is we have a cow-centered. We have a cow-centered society, a cow-centered culture. And what is the advantage of that? To the degree any collection of people, any society, any group understands how to order things and systematically organize so that the Vedic Varnashram system is there and centered around the cow, then even now, what do we say here? Here we're given, there's so much fear mongering. 6, now 7 billion people. Very soon, 8 billion. The population doubled in the last 50 years. You know, the resources are running out. We're polluting the earth. All these scary things are being said right now. You know, we've reached the limit. But that's because everything is being misused. If everything was done according to the Vedic standard in a cow-centered culture, this planet could easily support 100 billion. More than 10 times the present population could be easily supported and cared for. But this is not understood or appreciated because people are struggling to have, for instance, everybody on the planet Earth now, they want a big metal chariot. They want to ride in a big metal chariot. You know, as we see, Kurukshetra, the battlefield, yes. Then you have Krishna and Arjuna. They're on a great big chariot. So everyone is, this is another way that people are demonstrating their desire to be God. They want to have at least that gigantic demigod experience and situation of being in this huge, powerful, you know, run by 300 horses. Imagine they have like 300 big, powerful horses out in front pulling their chariot. So this is everyone's dream. This is what their desire is. And this is bound to happen also because everything is backwards in today's world. In America, especially in the Western world, we have what could be called the have-do-be dynamic. You've heard of this before? A have-do-be. In America, you have to have a job so you can have a car, and then you can have a wife and a child and a family. You've got to have certain things. You have to have things. And then you can do what you want. What do you want to do? You want to have a nice family. You want to do so many things. You want to do things in your job. So you can have. So it's have, do, be, and then you can be all you want, all you can be. Right? Isn't that in the army or whatever? So this is a standard phrase, a basic understanding we see again and again. It's completely backwards. In the Vedas, in the Vaishnav culture, according to the Vedic standard, It's the ideal is be, do, have. First, we have to know how to be. You know, shamo damas tapa tao tam, right? But in the Bhagavad Gita, there's so many verses like that. First, we have to be peaceful. And then so many things. We have to be honest. We have to be, in all these different ways, we have to be a worthwhile human being. And as we're able to do that effectively, then what we need to do will automatically become evident without any special worry or anything, because one who knows how to be will be called upon to do certain things. He'll be recognized as capable, talented. It's a meritocracy. We live in a meritocracy, and if indeed the Vedic standards is understood, and people are raised up through it as they demonstrate they have higher abilities and can handle better, higher level responsibility. So if we know how to be, then we'll automatically do what's best for us and everyone else, and we'll have whatever we need. By Krishna's arrangement and mercy, it'll work. Be, do, and then what we have to have will be provided, will be made available to us by higher divine arrangement. So that's the way it's supposed to be, but unfortunately in today's world, people are following the Western American standard, which is backwards. So we see unnecessary suffering, unnecessary strife. Even the technology, as I say, an automobile encourages people to think that they can be God rather than serve God. And all these, so many different things that we have that give people mystic powers. I'm given mystic powers. As we see, Durvasa Muni has mystic powers. But people become, like he was, easily intoxicated by any kind of power. Now I have what I want. I can get what? I can get more. So people lose their natural sense of how to be humble in this world, which is a very high value. To the degree we lose that, we see we cause trouble for ourselves and others in the world. And I was in India for 10 years. You're from Gujarat? Kerala? Oh, South India. Yeah, I've only been as far south as Bangalore. But you're called India Punya Bhumi. Punya Bhumi hai. Ati Sundar hai. So, we're justifiably incredibly grateful to you, because it's the highest culture. If there's any hope for people on the planet Earth, it is in India. Because you have the absolute highest possible knowledge and wisdom. I'll give you a quick example. I think I'm pretty much out of time. But there's Chaturved, Sama, Yajur, Atharva, Rig Veda, four Vedas. In the Rig Veda, there's an accurate number four, speed of light. You're in science? So did you know that? The Rig Veda has? And we're talking 20,000 years ago. Huh? Amazing. Isn't that amazing? And in Western history of science, they give credit to some man in Denmark 200-300 years ago. Same thing, the British, they were in charge of education, 1947 partition. So they made serious moves. They're very envious of India. When they lost India, they became angry. Sour grapes. We didn't like India anyway. That was their attitude. So what did they do? They used their power in the educational community. They had clout. And they put in all the books information that indicated that all the highest wisdom and knowledge is from Greece, the Greeks. Pythagorean theorem. No, it's in the Vedas. Anything you can think of, it's originally in the Vedas. And there are so many things. There's a pillar. I think, I'm not sure if it's in Delhi, somewhere in India. There's an amazing pillar of Heliopolis, I can't remember, Heliodorus, Heliodoric column. You've heard of the Heliodoric column, Heliodorus, column of Heliodorus? It was put in India by a man from Greece, and he's on there as inscribed, I am from Greece, but I am a Vaishnav, and it's ancient, hard to even absolutely be sure how ancient that is. So this exchange of information between India and Greece, it accounts for the fact that the Greeks, they had a very high level of knowledge, philosophy, understanding. Why? From India. So, India, Punya Bhumi, Mahabudhi. And if you go to Silicon Valley, who's in charge? People from India. If I go into any hospital in America and I look around, half the doctors are from India. So anyway, so that's my point. I'm just saying, you know, we're not as grateful as we need to be to, you know, Krishna and the people that are most dear to Krishna, your good self. So, you know, from your birth, you're hearing about Krishna. So this makes you very valuable. I'm trying to catch up and also have access to this remarkable value that, in my opinion, is the last best hope for all life on this planet. I'm convinced. Nothing else. So we have all these books. You're familiar with our Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, and so on. So we're providing this knowledge, but there's a problem. You can lead a man to knowledge, but you can't make him think. So that's our situation. So anyway, I thank you very much for coming to this class. And are there any questions? All the glory, Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Are there any questions or comments? I'll repeat your question. Nice. Transformation is more important than information, and how can we appreciate and understand it, if I understand your question? I'd like to comment on the first part of your question. I've been watching Vaisheshika in Silicon Valley, Mountain View. He has a nice temple there. And he gives amazing classes. I watch over the internet. And at the end of the class, he actually doesn't ask for questions. He asks for a reflection, which I think you do really nicely. When I first was trying to understand Jai Baladev, I was saying, what's he trying to give class now? But you don't. You're not trying to do anything, but you're offering your reflection. So you were very nice. You showed that you heard what I was saying. You stated it in your own words, and then you've come around to your question, which, if I understand it, is, so we're going through this process, and how can we maintain our enthusiasm to stay engaged? I think that's part of what you're asking, if I understand. Yeah.
Why does Krishna give us that ability? My suspicion, my understanding is that it's
Yeah, you're mentioning something from 7:8. Bhagavad Gita says, Rasaham apsukantaya prabhashmi shashi suryo pranava sarvavedeshu shabdike parasham nrishu, which is, you're saying, the ability in man, parasham nrishu. So we have that ability, and to the degree, it depends on surrender. Sarvadharmam prityaja. Krishna is saying to Arjuna, you have to surrender. And also it says that to the degree someone surrenders, then Krishna will reward them accordingly. So there's so many verses that answer your question, I think. Your question being that, you know, we're struggling, everyone's struggling. So how can we get through all these difficulties? You know, how can we know that Krishna is helping us? And how can we take advantage of his aid? And it's really, the answer is pretty simple, is that if I want to be in the light and I turn to it, I'm taking good advantage of the sun. But if I turn away from the sun, I'm going to be in the dark. And another part of it is very important. Prabhupada put a lot of emphasis on the value of association. So if we make a point of spending as much time as possible with devotees, engaged in devotional service, we become like an iron rod in a fire. So that's there as well. We take on the qualities that are being encouraged, that are given in these writings, because we read 2 hours a day. Prabhupada is saying we need to read this to have it become ingrained in our consciousness, and we become inoculated. Because otherwise, just as you say, the tendency outside of that kind of association, it tends to be very, very, it's going to be bewildering like anything. We're going to, what do you say, freak out. And it's true. We have a tendency to become frazzled and, off balance, because that's the nature of life in the material world. Things are happening like that. So this is an oasis in a desert of bizarre, disjointed, disconnected, confusing conditions and situations exist to an incredible degree, you know, in the world of the cheaters and the cheated. So we have refuge. We have shelter. This is, and more important than anything else we have, Namashraya. We take shelter not only of our association, temple, deities, and so on and so forth, but more important than anything else, we can take shelter. We're protected by the holy name in an amazing way. Prabhupada even said that one time. He said, all the temples can crumble to the ground. And except for Jitendra holding this one up for the last 50 years, I guarantee you this building would just be a pile of rubble in a lot. So Prabhupada's, description would be found to be true here, but this temple is here. But Prabhupada said it could crumble. All the temples can crumble. Even the books can all disappear. He said, but we still have the holy name. And that, no one can take that away from anyone. Once you have the holy name, that's the most important thing of all. In fact, the temples and the books are to bring people to Haranam, holy name, chanting of the holy name. And it's really true. I mean, you can test it. You can experiment. You can take risks. Krishna actually likes it when we take a risk, especially if we take a risk in his name. Jitendra even saw me. I get a little stupid with that. I test Krishna to an incredible degree. We were down on Moore Street, and I went up to someone who actually did look a little dangerous to begin with, and I said to him, chant Hare Krishna, or Hare Krishna. And he really wanted to kill me. Instantly, he wanted to kill me. But it happened to me in Berkeley one time, too. I was with my wife, and we were walking on the sidewalk, and I think someone overtook us, or we came up upon someone, and I said to him, Hare Krishna. And he immediately became ready to kill me. He really, even worse than this guy that we ran into here on Morris. And he really wanted to kill me, so much so, or at least do some severe damage to me, if not kill me. He was ready to rumble. So I actually, it was a great lesson for me, though. I had to get down on my hands and knees. I had to actually get down in front of him and beg forgiveness, which is good. I had no choice. Did I do that over on Morris? I don't think that guy was quite as dangerous. But this guy in Berkeley, he was like extremely angry. He must have had a bad experience somewhere along the way. He was in a bad mood. So, but it was good for me. It was a good thing. So Krishna is caring about us every step along the way. The worst things that happen ultimately are for the best. It doesn't kill you. What's it do? It makes you stronger. Absolutely. So we don't want trouble, but how we behave when we find ourselves caught up in trouble is by Krishna's arrangement.
that we find ourselves in, whatever condition or situation we happen to find ourselves in. So it's all for our benefit. Krishna cares about us. Sometimes it's hard to understand how that's the case, but those are just as you were saying. It's easy, when things are going well, it's easy to be all positive and fired up and happy. But things are going badly, you know. But then there's another trade-off there. When things are going badly, I'm more likely to say, Krishna, help me. When things are going well, I don't need God. I'm doing fine. I don't need God anymore. I'm doing great. So ultimately, Krishna is there for each and every one of us to an incredible degree. And the ones that are fortunate, just as you suggested, if when things are going well, I can avoid that tendency to think that I don't need Krishna. If when things are going well, I remember Krishna and I'm grateful to Krishna, that's the real sign of love. You cannot have love of God without a really serious foundation of gratitude. Then it's possible. An attitude of gratitude is so necessary. And to the degree we cultivate that in all our dealings, not only with God but with everyone, then our happiness will increase in this world in spite of all the problems and difficulties. So I know. Hare Krishna. I'm going to try to remember so I can, you know, this is a very nice example that you're giving. And there are some unsung heroes in ISKCON. Jitendra is definitely one of them. And so Jai Baladeva has just described how Jitendra was out at the airport. Actually, he and Bhakta Tim were very key, crucial, important, valuable personalities, because at one point we were giving out, we were collecting between $5,000 and $10,000 a day. Out at O'Hare, $2 million a year was coming in. And that wouldn't have been possible without Jitendra and Bhakta Tim, because they were in charge of bringing books back and forth through all three terminals, big cartloads of books. And so Jaya Baladeva is describing how one time Jitendra was there at the airport and saw, he was maybe 25, this is quite a few years ago, 25, and some angry 60-year-old, older man, came up and just tried to lay out Jitendra, you know, cold cock him with a sucker punch. and Jitendra, you know, understanding his position according to our philosophy, he didn't do anything. He just took it like a man. And fortunately, there was a witness, because the man who slugged Jitendra, he started to have a heart attack. He was having a grabber right there in the airport. And next thing you know, the police came and they were going to haul Jitendra away. They were going to collar him and yank him down to the Jefferson precinct right then and there. But instead, there was a witness. And the witness came up and said, "You got this totally backwards. This guy didn't do anything. He stood and took a punch. He's not guilty." So yeah, we see Krishna was looking out for him. So these things are going on. Back to Tim, the other hero of book distribution that people don't know that much about. He described to me recently another story about what happened out there that I had no idea about. One day, it was a similar situation. There was a big crowd of people. And in the middle of the crowd, there was a big overweight businessman. And he was turning purple and he was grabbing his chest. And it was another example. That happens a lot. And so there was a police officer there on scene already, and he was giving this person CPR and mouth-to-mouth. He was giving cardiopulmonary resuscitation, banging on his chest, and also going down and breathing air into him. So back to Tim, he had this, not only did he have a big cart with loaded with, you know, tons of books, but he had a horn on that cart, a beeper, a buzzer, some kind of a sound-making thing so he could get through the crowds. So he saw this thing unfolding, and he took his big cart, and he rammed right through that crowd with the horn going, beep, 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 beep. And he came up to where this guy was dying, and he bent down, and he started chanting Hare Krishna in the dying man's ears, one of his ears. And the cop was saying, "You get the F out of here." And Bhakti Tim just kept whispering Hare Krishna into the man's ear and turned to the top and said, "Ain't gonna." And he said, "I've never used the word ain't before or since." But right then and there, under the pressure of the circumstance, he said to the cop, "I ain't gonna." And he kept whispering, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna." So this is a very heroic thing to do, called upon by circumstances and, you know, the will of the Supreme Lord. Krishna, you know, asked him to do it. He did the best possible thing in that particular situation. And so I'll tell you another quick story about Jitendra gave me a copy of our family business. And on page 440, not to, you know, it's a funny story. And Vaisheshika wrote the book, Our Family Business. And in that book, he has a few descriptions of things that happened out at the airport. And so Jitendra let me read the book, and I got as far, it's about a 500-page book. I got almost all the way through it. I got to page 440. And I saw my name. Whoa. See, that's why we chant Hare Krishna. What's your name? Sunil? Sudhira. Sudhira. Very sober. Very sober-minded. Sudhira. So, Sudhir, Sudhir, Sudhir. Nice sound, isn't that? Don't you like hearing that? So that's why we chant Hare Krishna. We're trying to please. Nothing is more pleasing to our ear than our own name. So I'm looking at this book, and I see my name in this book that's just blowing my mind. And it's a description that Vaish put in the book, and he never tells the first part. The first part is that there was a guy out at the airport, and he looked like Mike Tyson, but he was bigger. Imagine Mike Tyson with an extra 40, 50 pounds or more. And so this guy, he hated Sarvapamadas, yours truly here. He hated, for some reason, I don't know. Anyway, I was the scrawniest little book distributor out at the airport. I was small time in every way imaginable. Least amount of books going out from me, least amount of money coming in, and I was, you know, even skinnier than I am now, if you can imagine. So this big, he was a sky cap. He had a uniform, he had a cap like this, and his job was to take people around in wheelchairs, bring baggage back and forth, called a sky cap at the airport. And so he decided that he really would like to kill me, or at least damage me. And one day he caught me. The international terminal now is a big separate building. It used to be just down a corridor, international terminal. And we'd go down to the international terminal. So I was headed down to the international terminal, and I was in a very narrow area of it, the corridor. And all of a sudden, boom, there he was. And he had me cornered, this big guy. I didn't know what to do. That was it. He was going to wipe me out. He was going to really clean my clock, as we say. I was a goner. I was going to get hurt really badly. That's what he had in mind. Suddenly, and this is the part that Vaish doesn't put in the book, but it happened. Suddenly, Vaish came out of nowhere. And he's this big, you know Vaisheshika? He's like an NFL football player, right? He's a big, strong, handsome guy. And boom, he came out of nowhere. And he got between me and this big demon. And he indicated that the guy was going to have to go through him to get to me. So anyway, so then the next thing that Vaish describes in the book is he says that the same guy, he couldn't get to me, you know, right then and there. So later on, anytime he saw me showing a book to somebody in the airport, he'd take a penny or at the most a nickel and he'd sling it. A few times, or at least one time, he caught me right here and it left a red spot. So the guy was serious and he wanted to do whatever he could. But here's my side of it that Vaish describes in the book. that wherever that coin would go, even if I was showing a book to somebody, which, yeah, that was his favorite time to try to distract me and, you know, get to me with his penny or his nickel, I would say to whoever I was talking to, I'd say, hang on, and they'd stay. And I'd go and I'd run wherever I had to run, and I'd get that coin. And I'd put it in my pocket, and I'd smile and do pranams to this big guy who wanted to kill me. I'd thank him like that. And then I'd immediately go back and do what I could to try to get the book into that person's hand. So this went on for maybe a half a year. It was a series of months where this was repeatedly happening. And so all of a sudden, in the most amazing, inexplicable way, the same guy, turns out his name was Mark. Mark came up to me. He put his arm around me before I even knew what was happening. And he said, you know what? You guys are okay. I thought, wow, wait a minute. How did that happen? But Weiss describes in Our Family Business, the way he explains it is, you know, even pennies matter. They're not just pieces of metal. They're part of a whole system of an exchange. There's interaction. There's a relationship. And so after a certain threshold had been crossed, it was inevitable that he'd have a change of heart because he'd made a sacrifice. He's engaged in the jugya. So he became our best friend. He actually would protect me and other devotees from trouble. So that's in the book, Our Family. That would have been in the 80s, probably in the mid-80s, somewhere in there. Jitendra is really good. Jitendra is amazing when it comes to telling you when different things happened, right? You know. I'm like pretty hazy on that. So, Sudhir, and your son's name? Vernal. Vernal? Vernal. How do you spell it? P? Oh, Prana. Prana. Pranayama. Wonderful. Prana is, and? V, not a P, a V. What's, oh, like, oh, pranava, pranava omkara. That's in that verse. That's in the verse that I just, 7-8, Bhagavad Gita. Pranava sarvavedeshu. So he's in 7-8, Bhagavad Gita. Pranava. In all the, and your wife's name? Indu. Nice family, huh? Hare Krishna. So Indu, what's the significance of the name Indu? Oh, moon. Oh, really? Soma. Chandra. The name for moon. Wow, nice. Jitendra means he who can conquer over his senses. Jaya Baladev is actually, you and I have the same name. My name's Sarvopama. We're both named for Lord Balaram, you more directly than me. So yeah, these are wonderful. You ask someone, oh, your name is Robert? They don't know what that means. There may be some etymological, but it's not immediately a part of their understanding. You know, they can maybe look it up somewhere. So yeah, very nice. Beautiful culture. The best available on this planet. Hare Krishna. Jai, all glory, Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Any questions? No? Anyway, you're very humble. I know it's the other way around, that we have a lot to learn from you, but you're, you know, it's, of course you're going to say like you say. Hare Krishna.